Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Hoya Hoops podcast. I'm your host, Aiden Curran, writer for Hoya's 24/7, and it's good to be back with you all after a couple weeks off. As you know, we have Kenner League coming up. Kenner League starts July 6th, that's Saturday, and it's one of the hallmarks of summer here in DC, so really excited to get that going. So what we're going to do in this podcast today is we're going to go over Kenner, we're going to talk some Georgetown news, we're going to talk RJ Davis, we're going to talk UConn being back in the Big East, we're going to talk a couple other things related to your Georgetown Hoyas. So to start, the big news since we last spoke, UConn back in the Big East. One of the original members of the Big East left in 2013 during the conference realignment period for the lackluster American Athletic Conference, and the Huskies are back. The Board of Trustees voted on Thursday, I believe, to officially move back to the Big East, and unsurprisingly, the Big East accepts them back with open arms. So what does this mean for Georgetown? What does this mean for UConn? And what does this mean for the Big East? In my opinion, this is good news for all parties involved. UConn finally escapes the AAC. No idea. Well, do you have an idea? They tried to go to the AAC for football. They had hopes and dreams, unrealistic hopes and dreams of being a football school, which is just ridiculous for a program in Storrs, Connecticut to expect to become a powerhouse in football. So it only took them 6 years, but they finally learned their lessons. So the Huskies are back. They're going to be coming back in 2020. So the Big East is going to go to 11 teams, and they're expected to keep their round robin format. So be a home and away game for each team that the Hoyas face on the schedule for all the Big East teams. It's really exciting. So UConn, Georgetown last played in 2017 on the tail end of a home and home. UConn lost that game. That was at the Verizon Center. The Hoyas won 72-69. The year before that, the Huskies emerged victorious against Georgetown. And so all time, Georgetown leads the series 36-30. This is obviously exciting news for fans, for students, for really everyone involved. I do want to kind of talk about the difference in perspective for Georgetown alumni, young and old. As a member of the 2018 class, obviously I understand the history between UConn and Georgetown, but I've kind of noticed a difference on Twitter in opinion between the older Georgetown alums and fans I follow and the younger ones. To me, I don't really know the history of UConn and Georgetown. Obviously, I know various big games that happen, but I think that there's more animosity amongst the older crowd. So I think you're going to see amongst the students and amongst young alumni like myself a little less excitement just because we don't really know what we're getting into. But do know that UConn is basically just one or two levels right below Syracuse in terms of being a rival to Georgetown. So that's going to be awesome for game environments at Capital One Arena moving forward. And got to give a shout out to No Escalators on Twitter, basically the chief Twitter account for UConn athletics and mainly UConn basketball. That's going to be pretty entertaining to have that account back in the Big East blogosphere. So make sure to give them a follow if you want to keep up with UConn basketball and UConn in general. So what does this mean for UConn? Obviously, they're doing cartwheels right now. This is what they wanted. They've finally accepted that basketball is their main sport, and pretty smart decision in my opinion, because football is just never going to happen. As someone who's from Massachusetts and is familiar with UConn football, that was just never going to work out. So basketball it is. They're going back to the Big East. Dan Hurley, this is going to help him out big time, although he has had success recruiting already. So, you know, what does this do for the recruiting scene in the Northeast and in Mid-Atlantic? Does Georgetown have more competition? I don't really see this as more competition necessarily in terms of the Big East helping UConn with recruiting specifically. I think that, you know, the point's been raised, I've seen from several people on Twitter, at this point, recruiting is a nationwide thing, and UConn was going to be scouting, recruiting the same areas that Georgetown was in already prior to them being the Big East. Does it help that Dan Hurley can say that you're going up against Big East competition instead of American Athletic Conference competition? Yeah, that helps. But, you know, Dan Hurley's a pretty damn good recruiter anyways, so he was probably going to get some good talent to begin with. And he already has started pulling in that high talent, that top talent in the nation. He got ACOC, a four-star power forward from Putnam Academy in New Hampshire. He committed during the season this year, and he's expected to debut this coming year. And they also got two four-star guards, James Boonite, guard from Brooklyn, and Jalen Gaffney, also a four-star guard, and he's from Westchester, Pennsylvania. So Hurley's already making his mark. Hurley was rumored to be in the mix for the Georgetown head coaching position. Obviously, that didn't pan out, but you know, I think he landed pretty softly in UConn. And with this news about UConn being back in the Big East, Hurley really has his chance to make his mark in this new conference. I'm sure that he'll become a lightning rod for some criticism from some opposing fans. I know he's one of the more demonstrative coaches out there, so I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more from Mr. Hurley and the Huskies going forward. What does this mean for Georgetown? So obviously you have two extra games on the conference schedule now for the Big East that they're going to play. So what does that mean? You're going to have two fewer non-conference games going forward starting in 2020. I would expect that they would take off to the mid-major teams they usually play right now as part of their non-conference schedule. So if you replace a lowly mid-major with UConn, that's a win for your tournament resume, your potential NCAA tournament resume. And so going forward, you know, there's better chance, bigger probability of getting a quality win against a good UConn team as opposed to feeling the pressure of having to beat an Arkansas State or one of these other crappy mid-major teams that sometimes have given the Hoyas some fits, as we well know. So that's a win for Georgetown in terms of scheduling. And in terms of the Big East, you get one of your founding members back, and that is always a good thing. I think that Val Ackerman, Big East commissioner, has done a great job building back up the Big East into the powerhouse that all of its fans, all of its teams want it to be. During the press conference, Val Ackerman said that the soonest that UConn will join is July 1st, 2020. 20 sports will join the league, and the basketball teams are going to play a 20-game league schedule. But I really want to talk about the job Ackerman has done for the Big East overall. I mean, just aside from bringing back UConn, who's won a combined 80 Big East championships in 34 years in the Big East. When Ackerman became Big East commissioner, that was 5 days before the mass exodus in the Big East. That was when UConn, Syracuse, Louisville, Pittsburgh, Notre Dame, and Cincinnati also left in 2013. But since then, the Big East has been doing pretty well. I mean, obviously, there's the lack of overall success that you could argue amongst the majority of its teams in the NCAA tournament. But two in the last
four national champions.
I know it's just one school, but that really speaks to the health of the league. It's really looking good. And I think that, you know, if Syracuse ever comes to its senses and decides that it too wants to stick to what it does best and become, you know, focused most on basketball as opposed to football, who knows? Maybe Jim Boeheim and the hated Orange want to come back to the Big East as well. And as much as we hate them, I think we can all agree that we'd all welcome them back with open arms to have that rivalry back in our lives. All right, so with that being said, we got to talk about RJ Davis. So RJ Davis is the class 2020 point guard from Archbishop Stepanak in New York. And it's been pretty well documented, Georgetown's interest in him for the past year or so. And it's honestly been kind of getting ridiculous just how many resources Georgetown's been pouring into recruiting this guy. He's clearly their top guy. They clearly see a lot in him. And this is one of the instances where Patrick Ewing has identified someone that he liked early on. You know, Davis started out as a 3-star recruit, and on some websites he's still a 3-star, but at this point he's cracked a top 100 for ESPN. I think he's ranked number 86 now, and he's picked up more offers. He's got Kansas interested, he's got Seton Hall. I know Villanova was in to see him, but they might have been in to see Adrian Griffin as well instead of Davis. But Davis is becoming a hot commodity, but Georgetown looks to be one of the front runners for his commitment. And this weekend was RJ Davis weekend. He took his official visit to Georgetown, saw a couple of pictures tweeted out from the Stepanak Twitter accounts. By all accounts, seems like it went well. Saw the picture with him, JT2, and Patrick Ewing, and just looks like natural fit. Seems like Davis likes Georgetown, and obviously Georgetown loves Davis. He took an unofficial visit during the season. I think he went to the Xavier game, maybe the Seton Hall game. I forget which one. But Akbar Wahid, assistant coach for Georgetown, is in charge of that recruitment. It's a lot of pressure on him to really reel in Davis here. You know, at this point, I think you're in pole position for the commitment from Davis, but you really got to finish this through and carry it out and get that commitment. Having Davis come in as a freshman when James Akinjo is a junior, that's good depth to have, and that really continues the strong lineage of point guards once Akinjo and McClung graduate. So as of right now, I think that the Hoyas has to be the prohibitive favorite for Davis, but you know, there's still a while to go and Davis is going to take some more visits. So you just hope that Georgetown stays in constant contact with him and really makes him feel appreciated and lets him know that they want him to be a Hoya long term. On the other side, Earl Timberlake, another guard in the class 2020 that the Hoyas have been interested in. Kind of seems like Georgetown's taking a back seat there, whether that's of their own doing or if that's just Timberlake's decision. Kind of the flip side of the coin. You got Davis, who seems to be really into Georgetown. It seems like Timberlake, on the other hand, is kind of passed them over. So that's, you know, it's a disappointment, but that might have to do with Davis recruitment. They might be prioritizing Davis more. And well, I'm not sure if that's the right decision, because I think Timberlake is a different kind of athlete and also has better size than Davis. But you know, I trust Ewan right now. I think he brought in Akinjo McClung, and obviously Mac was the internet sensation with all the dunks. But he was also a 3-star recruit, and he was fairly unheralded besides the dunking. But he brought him in, and McClung was obviously named to the Big East All Freshman team, and of course you got James and Josh LeBlanc. James was also on the Big East All Freshman team, but he was also Big East Freshman of the Year. And then obviously you got Josh LeBlanc, who's going to be the defensive anchor of this team for the rest of his time in the Hilltop. So I think that you're really seeing that Patrick Ewing is identifying talent early on, and he's really strong in his convictions on how he feels about these players. And when he sees a player he likes, he goes and gets him. And I think that's what you're seeing with Davis. It's exciting, but I think that, you know, obviously you're going to have the naysayers who say, "Oh, but he didn't get Cole Anthony." Well, let's be realistic here for the next couple of years. You know, obviously for a rebuilding team like Georgetown, you're not going to get the top guys like Cole Anthony right away. Sometimes you do, but for those that play it straight and play by the rules, it's a much taller task. And for Georgetown, I think you're going to see recruits like RJ Davis, like James Akinjo, who are really talented, but they're not as highly talked about on the national scale. Then you're going to see those guys come in the next 2-3 years, and then hopefully, you know, we're going to start getting those national guys. I know Jabari Abdur-Rahim is another target for the Hoyas, who he was recently scrimmaging with Team USA for their U19 team, I believe. He's another top guy for the class 2020. Seems like the Hoyas are not in the front of the pack right now, but that's another top guy that Patrick Ewing's trying to get in on. I know there's a question from one Twitter follower of Hoyas 24/7 about if Georgetown could be a top 3 team. I think they can. Do I think it's likely? I don't know. I would say it's 50-50 right now. I think you got Villanova and Seton Hall. I think those are going to be the top 2 teams. And then, yeah, I mean, I could see Georgetown vying for that 3rd spot in the Big East. I think they're going to have the talent. I think it's going to come down to McKinjo, if they can continue to develop at this fast pace that they've exhibited, I think you've got a real shot. I think you're going to need your 7 to be a beast for you, more so than Govan was. You're going to need Yurt Seven to be what Hoyas fans wanted Govan to be this year, and he wasn't. And what are you going to get from Jamarco Pickett? Are you going to see him step it up? Are you going to finally see him unlock some of that potential? I don't know. After 2 years, I'm not sure that we've seen enough from him to say that with confidence he's really going to break out in his junior year. I think at this point, if Jamarco Pickett can be a straight up 3-and-D guy, someone who can just really lock up his man the other end of the court and then hit 3-pointers with consistency, I think it's a really valuable trait for this team. You have Greg Malinowski, who graduated. He was your top 3-point shooter. Who are you going to replace him with? I don't know. There's a clear answer on this team right now. Terrell Allen, the UCF transfer, he comes in. He's an okay shooter. He's a decent shooter, but he's not a high-volume 3-point shooter. He did shoot 41% from 3, which is encouraging, but he only averaged about 2 3-point attempts per game. So where is that 3-point production going to come from? I don't know if it's going to come from Pickett consistently. We're going to see, but there's going to be an opportunity, whether it be Pickett or Galen Alexander, to really come in at that small forward position and really take over and become a key contributor for Georgetown this season. So Kenner League, it starts July 6th. We still don't have rosters. We still don't have schedules. Still pretty much in the dark about Kenner League, which is pretty much their MO. They just kind of pop out of nowhere and just get going right away. So the season goes from July 6th to the first week of August. And I think they might go to August 10th, perhaps. I think is the final day. You've got, for those who don't know, Kenner League is a pro-am league run by Nike. And you have all the Georgetown players participate in it every season. Sometimes you'll get the occasional NBA player. I know that the most recent was Malcolm Brogdon of the Milwaukee Bucks came, I believe it was last summer, and played. So you never know who's going to show up. If Jeff Green or Otto Porter are in town, I'm sure they would be willing to lace it up. But what can we expect from the Georgetown players in Kenner League? What can we look for? I think we've spoken enough about Omer, what we need to see from him. I think we need to see him dominate more than he did last summer in his first offseason as a Hoya. What I'm looking for from him, I'm going to be looking on the defensive side. I want to see his shot blocking ability, which is pretty good. But I want to see his ability to cover people when he switched on to them on the perimeter. I don't think he moves well. I think he's going to struggle in that area. So defensively, what can Yurt Seven give you? Is he going to be more of a presence than Govan, or is he going to be more of the same? And then offensively, how does he differ from Govan? Does he have more post moves? Is his game more polished? Is he tougher? Does he make an effort to fight in the low post to establish position? I hope so, because that was the most frustrating thing about Govan, was his just lack of fight, his lack of intensity down there. He never, whenever he got low and near the basket, the chances are he was going to finish with a nice jump hook. But there were too many times that he got pushed out by his man into the high post, and then from there it was just too difficult for him. So I need Omer to be tougher. I can't take another season of a weak and lazy center at the Hoya position. I need someone who plays with fire, the kind of fire that Patrick Ewing played with. So we're going to see. And obviously you have the two guards, Akinjo and Mac McClung. What are you going to see from them? I mean, they put on a show last summer, and now this summer they have an extra year under their belt. They're more experienced. I hope that the game slows down for them. What are we going to see from them? You had James, who was the first Georgetown player to win Big East Freshman of the Year since Greg Monroe. I believe that was in 2008. He was also first in assist to turnover ratio in the Big East, so I really want to see him become the floor general that he showed signs of last season. And in terms of McClung, I want to see the game slow down for him. I want to see him make smarter decisions. I want to see less turnovers. I want to see his ability to break his man down off the dribble, things like that. One of the biggest things for me is the wing position. You have Pickett, you have Alexander, you also have Myron Gardner, who was the 3-star wing that the Hoyas got commitment from a couple of months ago from Spire Academy. Teammates with LaMelo Ball. What is Gardner going to give you? Is he going to enter that competition for the starting wing position at the 3 for Georgetown? In the interview with Rothstein, Gardner was specifically highlighted by Ewing as one of the players to look out for, which was interesting to me. He highlighted Gardner, he highlighted Allen, and obviously he highlighted his best friend, Omeri at seven. But what is Gardner going to give you? Is he going to be polished enough to come out right at the gates and be another Georgetown freshman that starts from day one? I don't know if he has that in him. I think that you're going to see the competition is going to come down to Alexander and Pickett. But I think this competition is really going to be a great thing, especially for Pickett. I think he needs to be pushed more. And I think that with Alexander breathing down his neck, I think you're going to see a battle between them. You might not see it pan out in Kenner League, but once preseason starts, I think it's going to be really could be 50-50 for who between them starts. But just having these long athletic wings is going to give the lineup options for Georgetown and Patrick Ewing. There's going to be more variety there. And I think that's a really good thing for Patrick Ewing. And then you've got the freshman bigs. So you've got Kudus Wahab. I hope to God I pronounced that right. You got Malcolm Wilson, and you have Timothy Ego Hefe, I hope I pronounced that as well. Wahab, he was the gem. He was the gem of this class. Four-star recruit from Flint Hill, nearby Virginia. If your seven weren't here, I would say that Wahab would be the freshman that was going to start from day one. And I think that you're really going to see Wahab push your seven 4 minutes. I think Wahab is going to come in as the backup big man right away. And I'm really excited to see him play. He's a big physical guy. He can dunk the ball. He's an absolute presence at the rim. Great shot blocker. He is what Ewing wants. And it's very clear about that. Ewing wants his centers to be more of a defensive presence. He wants them to be physical. And it seems that Wahab meets all those traits for the center that Ewing wants. And then you have Malcolm Wilson. Wilson, he's really long. He's really tall and talented player, but he has admitted this in a recent interview, strength is his biggest issue. And I think that interview came from Emmanuel Gutierrez, but apologies if that was not where that interview came from, but he mentioned that strength was his biggest weakness. And I just looking at Wilson's body, I just think he's pretty underdeveloped right now. And I think he needs to hit the weight room for probably a full season's worth before he can really become an impact player for this team. Could be a couple of years that it takes for him to really pack on some muscle. There's been some whispers of him potentially being redshirted this year just to give him that time and keep the pressure off him instead of just languishing on the bench. But in the same interview with Wilson, he said that redshirting has not been discussed. So it looks like he's going to start this season on the team, on the roster. And that's going to be interesting to see if he gets any minutes at all. It'd be interesting to see how he does in Kenner. I think that he's got a lot of work to do. I think the tools are there, but he's a really raw prospect. But if we're really talking the underdeveloped prospect here, the underdeveloped freshman, we're going to look at the African native, Timothy Ikahefe. There's been some whispers that there's been issues with paperwork for him. I can report that I've heard that it's not certain that he's going to be cleared to play right away. So the team is uncertain about that. I think that kind of explains why they've been dabbling still in the 2019 class for recruits. Niven Glover is still waiting to hear about that commitment decision. That seems unlikely that he comes to Georgetown right now, from what I've heard. But obviously, if he were to come, I think that would tell you what you need to know. From what I've heard, it appears that Ikahefe would be the one that would not be in the team if something like that happened. We'll see what happens going forward. I think that right now, if I had to give it a percentage, I would say it'd be 55% likely that Tim starts the season on the roster and we have a full team. But I do think there is a small chance that he starts the season off the roster, but we're going to see about that. Another person kind of late that I'm excited to see is Allen from UCF. I think he's going to be a great sixth man off the bench. And I think it'll be interesting to see the competition between him and Jagan Mosley. I think Mosley handled that sixth guard, that backup point guard role last season. But Mosley isn't a true point guard. He's not a true ball handler. I think Allen fits that role much more. And having a veteran presence like that is going to be really key for this team moving forward. And Allen, he's a pretty complete player. He doesn't do anything excellent, but he does really most things. He's pretty capable in all at facets of the game. He's a pretty speedy guy, and he's active on defense. That's really going to help. It's also going to put pressure on guys like McClung and Akinjo to really make sure that they don't fall asleep on defense. I know that Ewing was certainly happy to bench either one of his freshman guards if they made lapses on defense, and you're going to see the same thing next year. I mean, he's not going to let either of the freshman guards become comfortable just because they're sophomores out. Allen's going to be there to put pressure on them, make sure that they stay in their P's and Q's, especially on defense. A couple of notes about Allen. He led the Knights in assist rate at 26.2%. And the flip side of that is he also had a turnover rate of 22.3%. So, you know, it's kind of hit or miss with him, but I think that Allen's going to be a steadying presence for this team. And that's really exciting. I think they were lacking that veteran option that could really come in the court and stabilize the offense, especially when they had their cold spells. And as mentioned before, Allen's not a noted three-pointer. He can put up a couple a game, and he makes them a decent clip for the small volume that he shoots them at. He shoots 41% from three last year. But I'm really excited to see what the DMV native, what Allen can do in Kenner League, and just kind of get familiar with his game and see what role he can fulfill for this team. So with that, that's our preview of Kenner League and the recap of all the Georgetown news. It was pretty busy couple of weeks, and we're going to see moving forward for Kenner League how this how many podcasts we do. I think we're going to try to do one a week with quick Kenner League recaps and any other recaps of Georgetown-related news. As always, would appreciate if you would rate the podcast on whatever platform you listen to and give us 5 stars. Download, subscribe, resubscribe, all that. If you want to find me, you can find me at @A_Curran_. That's Curran. I'm Aiden Curran. You can also follow us at Hoyes 24/7. We'll still be pumping out the content all summer long into the fall when the new season begins. And so with that, this is Aiden Curran signing off, and see you in Kenner.